session number 11750, reel 11.
Mr. Ilenico, reel 11. You were telling me about the train journey in September, or late September 1943, and how you got to Brenner, the Brenner Pass, if you'd like to continue.
Yeah. As I say, we went through the Brenner Pass. Not as I knew it then, but eventually I found out what's where we did go. And by a lot of rough riding in the train, we arrived at Innsbruck, where it was about lunchtime, they let us out on the platform and gave us a portion or a measure of skilly, German skilly.
Now, that was your first German skilly. How was that different, if you see what I mean?
No different at all. About as thick as the Italian, but which is water.
Was it still
no macaroni? No. More cabbage, plenty of cabbage in it, shredded cabbage. An odd piece of potato floated about, an odd piece of sausage meat, sliced sausage meat in it, and water.
Sounds better, really. Was it better?
As thick, I like thick soup, you see, so as regards to the content, I would say yes, because I'm not a macaroni fiend by any means, you see. So there was more to an English standard of soup. Well, it's still not good. And a drink of Ersatz coffee, or it might have been tea, but it was still Ersatz is imitation, artificial.
Was
you know
the
that.
First time you'd had.
First time we'd clapped onto a German meal.
And what did you think and of a piece, coffee?
And a piece. Well, it tastes like bark if they brewed it off bark off a tree.
Did you ever get used to it?
Well, we had to.
Did you ever enjoy it, though? You know,
I never enjoyed it. I never enjoyed anything German.
And what was
never
it?
Will.
You got bread as well, you said.
On bread, which was the famous blackish coloured bread it is. Very dark brown. A chunk of it. We didn't have to measure it out, you just cut in chunks and they lob you one. But the reception on the platform wasn't very homely.
With the civilians. In what way?
Well, we were spat at, ridiculed, fist waving at us, all that fighting attitude, not actually thumping you, they didn't touch you, but the fighting attitude, yeah. Englander.
And that's from the swine. That's from the Austrian.
Yeah, well, they're German bread lark, aren't they? They're all the same cut. Swinerei, called it. All the names under the sun. Which going to get a bloody less of something to eat there, you follow? And that was the stop there where we were all piled in again. And locked and barred, as usual, and trundled on our merry way. I mean, it's the same performance, the bloody wheels are going round, it goes dark and chuckety-chock, and you're pissing all over the place, and the bucket knocked over again, the same routine, same conditions, same rows, same trouble. And we arrive at a place called Mühlsberg in Bavaria. Mühlsburg, Camp or Stalag 7A, another transit camp. I was only in there one night, so nothing really to report on that. It was just a matter of banging you in somewhere, getting your head down, and moving on tomorrow. And from there, they moved us to Lambsdorff. which in the period of we were there acclaimed two names. When we arrived, it was 8B. And when I left it, it was 344. Because they'd extended it and made it huge. And they'd split it up, you see, for some reason.
Now, you'd have got there October-ish?
Aye, September, October time. Yeah, yes, October. Yeah. And the same layout of a POW camp, but huge, huge. A little town in itself. Huge. Because it was run in the First World War. Well, you know that, don't you? And between wars, I believe they'd used it as barracks for the German army, for manoeuvres and training and that, you know, like our terriers. But huge reception, admin, commandant, bloody documentation office, but doing your clothes, clean your clothes.
Laundry.
No. Disinfestation unit. Clothes, you follow? Barbers, tailors, everything. This huge, huge road right up the centre. RAF compound, all RAF. Compound for the Canadian commandos. Russian compound. The England compound. The French. You name it, they were all in it. Massive. Little town on its own. And that's where you want to go if you want to talk about bartering. Like Petticoat Lane. Down the centre of that road, like Petticoat Lane. Cigarettes, you name it, you could get it. By barter. Yeah? But, as I say, right, documentation. We arrive, I get a number 35080, POW number. Name, rank, what have you, all the performance, what's it at all. Even bloody fingerprints, photograph. Disinfestation, stripped down, all my clothes, my eye tack, getting all that, goes in a bloody big boiler, steam boiler, comes out, damp, you know, with the steam, not drying enough, damp. Of course, all the vermin's gone, if there's any, which, as I say, in Italy, never come across today. And then, after that performance, allocated to a nut. And then, the same routine. Skilly. Ertz has coffee or tea. Lovely library there. Library, yes. Band, their own band.
Okay, I'll come back to some of these things.
Yeah.
How did the... I don't want you to repeat material, because I think...
No,
I
know.
But how did the hut compare with the hut you'd had at PG-73, for instance?
Much the same. Same type. Double-tiered bunks. Huge stove in the centre for eating. Outside latrines and wash ablutions.
So, sounds pretty similar setup.
Similar, but on a huge scale.
It's also colder in Germany.
Colder. Allocation for eating of coal buckets, kept reasonably warm. And when I were there, it's cold, because I think I've shown you a photograph where it's bloody snow on the ground, isn't it? Because, as I say, October arrival, I went through a winter there, but I wasn't there long enough again, because they don't have you hanging about in there. That is a disposal of POWs for work.
So you,
and the medical.
Hang on.
That was on the admin, on the reception, the medical.
You had a medic.
A medic, and of course, if you could blink your eyelids, you was A1. Fit. So that was it. That was their medical.
Now, what was your medical state, would you say, when you got there? You'd been...
Well, I'd had this sickness, this dysentery and whatnot from the desert. And fortunately, as having to do no work in Italy, and I'm not saying I was well fed since then, I hadn't deteriorated. I'd lost maybe a bit of weight. It was weight that it possibly would be better for me to lose. I was more a fitter weight, although it wasn't my normal weight, you see. And I'd done no grad, no nothing.
So you were basically all right.
Basically all right, and I must be honest, I would say I was fit then, but as I say, if some poor buggers went in there dying on the feet and they blinked their eyelids, it was A1 for work.
So we've looked at the hubs, and they were pretty well similar. The food you got at Landstorf, I presume, was the same as you got at...
But in a Germanified skillet.
It was like the Innsbruck
and the black
food.
Bread, yeah. Yeah, yeah, like the
was
Innsbruck.
Was there more of it than there had been in Italy?
Same ration. Mess tin, two-thirds of a mess tin, and your top with your...
Were you still getting your Red Cross?
Parcels was, well, you got your parcels, but as I say, there's no set time. You might, we've gone a month now without a parcel. Well, not a month, because I'm talking about when we're in the working parties now, but as I say, they weren't regular. It wasn't regular, and the numbers wasn't the same. As like I've told you before, if you had one this week, you wouldn't guarantee you'd get one in a fortnight. And if you got one in 3 weeks, you wouldn't guarantee there'd be one between three. They could say, oh, it's one between four now.
Did they spike the cans in Germany?
They spiked the cans in Germany.
So that was throughout Italy and Germany?
Yeah. Spiked the cans in Germany, they did it all, they even pinched fags. And it was rougher on you.
That's interesting. Let's move on to that. Were the guards rougher?
Yeah.
Can you tell me how? At Landsdorf?
Well, there was rougher to the extent that, you know, the German nature is that if they're top dog, they let you know it, aren't they? They're a type of people, aren't they? The Italians are more effeminate, you know. As regards doing guard duties, all that, they are a bit effeminate. But the Jerry boy, when he thinks you are down there, he bloody keeps you down there. And if you find the smallest excuse to let you know you're down there, their attitude is arrogant.
And
they don't say raus like that. They bloody push you. Say raus. Bugger off, you see. A push, you emphasise it with a push, a shove. And if he's walking along when he's got his bloody rifle on his shoulder, he'll nudge in the bloody back with his butt end, the end of it. Push, you nudge.
So you found them as guards much worse than the Italians?
Oh, yes. They were, not quiet, but they're effeminate. They don't seem to have a heavy-handed attitude as the Italians. These buggers are arrogant, bloody square-headed. What's it? They go about the... Of course, it's bred in them. It's always been that, haven't they?
And this business being pushed, that happened to you. It's not just hearsay. That you were pushed about.
I've been pushed about with them. I don't think anybody's missed being pushed about with them.
No.
And the poor bloody Russians, God love us, they come off worse than us.
So you could see from where you were that they were treating the Russians, the Poles...
Oh, yes, and I bet they hardly fed them. They hardly fed them. And there at Lambsdorff, you know, when they patrol these avenues at night time, when every bugger's in their huts, they have these Alsatians like we the police us here, these guard dogs. Wandering round with them. They say one disappeared in the Russians. That is one of the stories, whether it's a legend or whether it's a fact. But at Lambsdorff, they said that this bloody dog was walking about with this here guard, and he let it off the leash because he seen something, I suppose. He suspected it, and it got in the Russian compound, and it never bloody come out, and all he saw was his pelt hanging on the wire.
Was that a story at the time or a story since?
No, a story at the time. Yeah, and the Canadian commandos, you remember the Canadian commandos?
At Dieppe.
At Dieppe, they chained them to the bloody bunks. Yes, I don't know how long they was chained there. They was let loose at finish, but they chained them to the bunks.
Were you allowed to...
One bugger committed suicide in the water tank that served the wash the ablutions. Was we allowed what?
Were you allowed to go into the other compounds, or was it just you at Lightning?
Our own. You could converse through these...
As before, there was wire lift, right.
But you could come out into the main avenue, where it was like bloody Petticoat Lane.
How did they stop you going from the main avenue into, say, the Canadian?
No, because of the guards along this wire, you couldn't drift in and out.
So they let you into this main road, but you back into your own?
About half a dozen stalls. But as I say, they sold everything. Some of them even made the blowers for blowing food up and were selling them for cigarettes because somebody had the initiative to make one himself. Yeah.
Now, there sounds like there are a lot more facilities. For instance, the barbers. Was there a barbers in the Italian camp, for instance? We didn't mention.
No.
So what would you do there?
Well, funny you should say that. I never bloody thought of that. Who cut my hair?
So in the German
it
camp...
It must have been, eh?
So in the German camp, what did you do? Would you pay?
Well...
Or was it just free?
You could get your hair cut free, but you can imagine how long it'd take you to get your bloody hair cut with all that lot there and one little shop. But, as I say, this was a transit camp purely and simply to feed his working parties. And each day there was a wall with all these names on and the number that you was going to, and you had to keep your eye on it.
So it was your responsibility to see. It was like being drafted in a sense.
Mm-hmm. And my first one was E535.
What would you do during a typical day at Lambsdorff? I mean, how would you spend the day? Was there much sport or stuff organised?
There was the same facilities for handball, netball, punching a ball about, card schools. As I said, they had their own band. They had their own, they had their own concert party. And as I've shown you, they had a photographer come round, and he'd take all the bloody up together, and you could send that home. That were all right. That was good. I bet the bloody commandant were getting a cut out of that. The bloody photography, you see, for taking photos, and that was okay to send home, which I did do, didn't I?
Was he a British photographer?
No, Jerry. Yeah, Jerry. They went out. There was fatigue parties. You used to go out logging. You could go out on that if your name was up. Go out logging and bring because plenty of bloody timber around there, you know.
Did you have to do that?
I'd been out once on it.
What was it like? Tell us about it.
Well, you got the civvy that was. Really, the skilled man with the saw, didn't you? And he got the tree down, and then you was given the bloody saw, you and your mate. And when it was down, when the danger had passed, you was given the task of sawing it into blocks, and then you had an axe, so you got the bloody axe, chopping it into logs, and then loaded, horse and like the old-fashioned dray type, loading the logs in and bringing them into the kitchen.
For cooking. How long were you there before you did see your name up on the board?
I didn't see Christmas there. So that was October, maybe the beginning of December.
Just a couple of months then.
Yeah, you were lucky if you lasted that long. It was like bloody Auschwitz, so how long you lasted. The longer you could last in Lansdow, the better it was for you.
Do you remember anything before you left, any other stories of anything that happened to you before you moved?
Do you mean in Lansdow? No.
In December then?
Yes, my name come up on the wall for me to go to E535. It's a place called Sosnovich.
And whereabouts is that?
It's in Obersilesia, Poland, which is extinct now.
And whereabouts, sorry, I know it sounds daft, but whereabouts in Poland? What was the nearest big town?
Boyton, in the German way, now it becomes Bittem or Katowice. That'd be the nearest large city, Katowice.
How did you? What you were told you were going to E535? Were you told what that was? What you were going to do?
No.
And how many were there on that working party?
Couldn't say. I would say what? Dozen. Maybe it's a dozen. You see, you were replacement. Some buggers got hurt. Somebody died. Somebody was ill. And when they was ill, or they was hurt, or they was useless, they didn't become useful, they were sent back to Lansdow to recuperate. And then when they've got them reasonably fit again, they bang them out to another working party, or maybe the same one. But that was the rotation of people.
Now, when you were on the you got kitted out a British uniform when you were put on a party.
I got, shall we say, it could be a second-hand one 3 times back, you know, that had been cleaned in the disinfestor. Well, brand new.
Did you get anything else, or were you still just with your kidney dish spoon?
Still on my kidney dish, my spoon. And little bits and pieces, like I've shown you a little book I'd got in Italy, I kept all little.
What about underwear and stuff like that, for you, extra shirt or socks or anything? Or would you just have what you stood up in?
All I had what I stood up in. No extras. No extras at all.
Were you pleased to be sent to a working party? I mean,
well, it was a case of the unknown. And it wasn't a fear of the unknown. It was more a curiosity of the unknown. Obviously, what short time I'd been in there, I'd heard, as you get on the bush always, it's always bush, it's nothing printed, blokes had come back saying, I've just come from, where is it? I've just come from Gleiwitz. I've been on a farm, or I've been in a chemical factory, bloody awful. Been down the salt, in a salt mine. And you've got the type of work that was going on, where they were going to. You've got the feelings of the person who'd worked there. You've got a bit of know-how, a bit of gen about what was happening and where they were going and where they were coming from. See, but you didn't know the numbers. 535 mine was. So what am I going to? Am I going to a salt mine? Am I going to a chemical factory? Am I going to a steelworks? Where the bloody hell am I going? But we don't know, see? But soon ever I arrived at Sosnovich.
What about the journey? Hang on. Because there's only about 12 of you, so how did you get there?
We went, if I recollect rightly, we went in trucks. It's not far from Lambsdorff, you know. No, it's Lambsdorff, I would say, in a truck. Couple of hours, an hour and a half. So,
what, What happened when you got there?
Well, when we got there, we was given a billet, which was double tier bunks, straw mattress, etc.
Was it a hut?
Hut. Yeah. And I was billeted. Strangers again. A couple of New Zealand lads, twins they was, and they'd been throughout the war together, out the New Zealand Army. The Bunny. Bunny they were called. Bunny Brothers, we called them. A lad from Southampton, that was the four of us, within close proximity in the hut.
And what were you? What had you been sent to? What was E-535?
535 was a coal mine. And I'd never been less than, or more than 6 feet below ground in all my life. And when I thought about a bloody coal mine, I mean, I was really a bit worried and anxious.